Now, you've known many men in high positions, and I'm sure that you've been aware of ego and...
most amusing thing in the world.
Ego?
Yeah.
Did King have any ego? He must have had.
I don't think he was an egotistical man, no. And I don't think he had the kind of ego that he had. In fact, if people flattered him, he looked embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that he had a job to do. That's the way he kept saying it. There's a job to be done, and let's get on with it. And he didn't want anything to interfere with that job.
But how could he be so sure he was right all the time?
I don't think he ever thought he was right all the time. It was just... after all, he was doing all these things in the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Combined Chiefs of Staff and with his own staff. I don't think he ever decided that everything he said or thought was the right thing without it being talked over.
Didn't you ever, in all your talks with him, ever hear him say, I fouled up, I was wrong, I really messed that one up,
no.
I would have done it a different way?
No.
Wouldn't that be dangerous, a man that...
I don't think so, because I think that he was the type of man who didn't make decisions like that.
But he could not have made all right decisions, could he?
As far as the war was concerned, I don't think any of his decisions were his alone. I don't think he would have wanted it that way.
Well, let me put it this way. I know in examining the strategy of World War II that he had some strategic thoughts which didn't make sense and that was strongly opposed by some of the best naval minds in the Navy at the time. For example, he wanted very much to land on Formosa. And Spruance and Forrest Sherman and all the top planners out in the Pacific were violently opposed to going anywhere near Formosa. And yet King fought for it and wanted it and wanted it, and they finally thrashed this thing out.
Well, this was to escape to Miss South Philippines, of course.
That, I suppose, had a lot to do with it.
Well, that was the reason for it.
But it just didn't make sense.
Well, he gave up on it.
He gave up on it, but the interesting thing was Spruance at one point said that he listened to the final arguments in San Francisco. I guess this was 1944 sometime, and Spruance commented he just couldn't understand what King was arguing for, because it made so little sense to Spruance to go to Formosa, he simply could not understand King's line of reasoning.
Admiral King's whole idea was to go to Formosa and then stop Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to skip the Philippines, and that's why he fought so for it, and you read history today and they wonder why it wasn't done.
Yeah. Well.
But he gave in.
He gave in. But what interests me is that...
And he was right. If they'd have skipped the Philippines and Formosa to Japan, it had been far more sensible.
Yeah.
All right. Who was smart?
But the point was, for that particular thing, he gave in. And he would give in. He would give in on other things, too.
Of course.
He would give in on other things.
Of course.
But
his whole attitude was, well, he used to often use that, 50,000 Frenchmen can't be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if his staff and all the men under him argued it with him, even though he felt he was right, he did not insist on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that great example right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And King was absolutely right and they were wrong.
But he
gave in on it.
But it's interesting that by giving in a way, he was saying, all right, I'll go along with your way of thinking. But just knowing human nature, it's still interesting to me that in all the hundreds of decisions that he had to make, the thousands of decisions he had to make, all during that war, that at no time did he indicate to you that, I messed that one up, Charlotte, and I never should have done it.
No, I don't think that he would have probably said it to... I don't know that he would have said it to his staff.
Well, no. He would have said it to you, if anybody would.
Yes, I would think so. I just don't think that right or wrong in that, it's all right. That's lost and that's over and that's a sign. Now let's get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he would stop to think I was overruled or that it went wrong or anything else. All right, if that was a mistake, it's a mistake. Put it aside and let's do what has to be done.
Was he, was he what you would call a thoughtful man? Did he...
One of the most thoughtful men I've
No, I don't mean thoughtful from the sense of being considerate.
Kind. No,
I mean a person who just likes to sit and think about things for a while and to ponder them from all sides.
Very, very much.
He was.
Very much. It made no difference what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Made no difference what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I used to get rather cross. I decided we were great friends with Jim Mooney, and he then finally became president of the Jeep Corporation, the corporation mm-hmm. that owned Jeep. And mm-hmm. I said, Jim, I want a yellow Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim said, for God's sake, they're all khaki colored. And I said, I know, but I want a yellow Jeep. And Jim finally decided I could have a yellow Jeep. So I got a yellow Jeep. And I was counting my pennies and Paul's pennies and everybody's pennies to see if I could afford to buy this Jeep. And I got so damn sick and tired of Ernest going all around the barn about whether I should do it or shouldn't do it. And was I looking at it this way and was I looking at that way? And I wasn't jumping into this thing, wasn't I? And I said, Ernest, I don't care if I go in the hole. I'm going to have that yellow Jeep. I need it here on the farm, and I want it yellow. I don't want it khaki colored. But there wouldn't be anything that would be done that you shouldn't consider it from every angle.
Well, that's quite interesting, too, because so often with decisive people, they'll jump into things without giving a lot of thought.
No, that wasn't him at all. Everything was careful. Worrying about the way he would leave the money to Mrs. King, how much she'd have, how much she'd need, and who would really write the checks for her if Eleanor left, and so on and so forth. All of this worry around about that, and what would be left to the children, and what would happen to Joe, and that business about Joe not going into the service, and oh my God, we haggled that thing over for a month.
But how could he worry about things like that, but still...
He set them in sections.
Okay. You mean he could worry about some things, but the business of running a war, that didn't worry him. He apparently had...
Oh, I think it worried him, yes. I think every moment.
In what way?
There was...
It
was a tremendous thing in the first place.
Well, how did he shoulder the responsibility? Was
quiet.
It, was it a burden? Was it a...
No, it was a job to be done. Anything that was a job to be done was done.
Mm-hmm. But he would... Perhaps handling his family affairs was much more mentally agonizing to him than fighting a war, perhaps.
Well, it was a worry.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a job, really, was it? It was something that had a lot more wrapped up into
that's
it.
Right. That's
much
right.
more personal thing.
That's right.
Did you ever hear him express, especially in the early part of the war, did you ever hear him express any pessimism, or did he have his down times when everything had just gone wrong that whole damn week, and he was really in a foul mood or discouraged?
Yes, he could get in foul moods.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely could get into foul moods about things that weren't going the way he thought they should go.
But how about discouragement and pessimism? Did you ever see that?
No, I never saw pessimism.
Mm-hmm.
He was always sure that it could be worked out. Always sure it could be worked out.
Was there anything that could have defeated him, that could have beaten him down? Or was he so strong that he could
overcome
almost anything?
Well, the only time that I ever really knew him to just feel that the end has come was when he was chief of the Atlantic Fleet and felt there was nowhere to go from there. Find something bigger to tackle.
He was worried there was no place to go because he was an ambitious man, or just because the Navy was his whole life and that was the end of it?
His whole life.
Mm-hmm.
That Navy, oh boy, that Navy.
How did he feel about the Navy?
He just loved every stick and stone. He just, American Navy was just his complete life.
Mm-hmm.
Aviation, he loved aviation, but I always felt that he was always a black shoe man, even when he was an aviator.
So he won, I guess the Navy was all he really ever cared about.
That's right. I think it was. I really think it was. Just what? And then we'd have long fights about whether you should have a four-cylinder motor or a six-cylinder motor, and the four-cylinder motor was more economical and gave you all the power you needed.
Let me ask you just about a couple more people.
Yeah.
Two only, and then I think we'll wrap it up because this can get fatiguing to both of us,
yes,
I think.
Yeah.
Winston Churchill, now there was a man he had to work with a lot. Did he ever talk too much about Churchill?
Well, he thought Churchill was damn clever and that often got things out of Roosevelt that he shouldn't have gotten out of Roosevelt. And I'll never forget going to the British Embassy to a dinner party one night and having one of the secretaries of the British Embassy tell me how much they worshipped Roosevelt. And I said, well, it's very interesting. I said, we all think that Churchill's so wonderful. And he said, yeah, we don't think so much of Churchill. We feel about Churchill the way you feel about Roosevelt. I always thought that was funny. And then Churchill would come, you know, and he preferred staying at the White House than he did to the British Embassy because he could keep kind of getting into things, you know. Mm-hmm. And that used to worry Roosevelt because it was very strenuous for Roosevelt to have Churchill in the same room. And one story they loved about Churchill, one time the British Embassy gave a dinner party and then he came home tight. And he bowed back to the White House tight, and the valet was getting him undressed, and Churchill said, yeah, of course there was an American aide too, yeah, said he, the American aide helping get Churchill back, yeah, he said, you think I'm so drunk that I don't know whether I should put my ass or my head on my pillow while you watch me. So there was always some kind of a joke or other like that about Churchill, and then every time he made a speech, you know, he had a pint bottle of brandy and he drank most of it before he went on the platform to loosen his tongue. So Admiral Land was always kind of his aide. He liked Admiral Land. That Jerry was a great friend of ours and he'd tell us a lot of these tales about Churchill. King thought Churchill was a very capable, able man. He thought that lots of times he outsmarted Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And he used to worry some about it. And, of course, Churchill didn't like to have King around too much because King was always fighting things for the Pacific. And Churchill didn't want anything to go to the Pacific. And, of course, Churchill loved Marshall because he kept after Marshall to get the things he wanted for Europe. So whenever King went on all these meetings to Casablanca and to Tehran and so on and so forth, well, I don't think that he thought that Churchill managed with Stalin as well as he might have. He used to make gaffes and that and all, but he admired him and admired his ability. I think that as far as that was concerned, King just, after all, he was the head of the British government at the time, and Roosevelt was the head of the American government at that time, and that was it, and there they were, and you took it.
Did he like to take all those overseas trips?
Yeah, he had a good time on those trips. Mm-hmm. He enjoyed them. Mm-hmm. They lived in very fancy places and had all kinds of care and went around and saw everything. And let's see, he brought me this one.
They probably got a lot accomplished.
He brought me this from Casablanca, I think. He used to bring something from there mm-hmm. to every place. That's the prettiest thing we ever brought.
Isn't that beautiful?
Isn't that a beautiful thing?
Isn't that simply mm-hmm. beautiful? Mm-hmm.
And he loved it. He liked to do a little shopping, and he'd take the girls all something. He always brought something back for the girls and something back for Mrs. King. And I'd say two or three times, but didn't Maggie love it? And I stopped asking that because mm-hmm. He'd say she'd just put it down. Mm-hmm. But he always brought something.
Two more quick questions, mm-hmm. and then we'll quit.
Yeah.
How did he feel about Carl Vinson? Because Vincent was a...
He liked Carl Vinson very much.
They got along well?
They got along beautifully. He was crazy about him, really.
Because
he fought for the Navy.
Yes.
Vincent fought for the Navy. Anybody fought for the Navy was all right with King.
And then one final question. Of all the men that King had to work with in World War II, was there any one or two people whom he particularly admired for the brains or their integrity?
There were four men that he loved and admired that I can remember of, mm-hmm. and that was Cook and Edwards and Spruance and Pye. He loved them, he believed in them, and he thought they had brain and ability. Mm-hmm. Now there must have been others, but
those are
the four that I remember that he really felt close to.
Very interesting. Really. I think we'll stop and close it then.
All right.
No, come on.
No, but he was, he was, we would have parties and get a little high, and he'd dance and have fun, and they'd be from commander on up to admirals at the party, and there was no difference. He could have been one of the lieutenants at the party. And he was convivial. Everybody loved him. He was great fun, and he never forgot the next time that he really had a good time with them, and remembered we had a good time, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go out to the Army Navy Club to dances, and he'd dance with all the girls, and they all loved it, and they were all crazy about him. He was a good dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd have such a good time doing it. Mrs. King wouldn't go to the dances. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't go. She wouldn't dance, and she didn't want to go. And at first she was very happy to have him go with us. But then finally she got a little tired of it. I didn't blame her.
Mm-hmm.
But he had fun, and people liked him and enjoyed him, and the men, as they said, they could have all this fun with him. But by George, when they got back on board ship, he was in command, and he forgot, as far as they were concerned, they'd ever been out together.
Mm-hmm.
That same old story of bright-eyed and bushy-tailed when they were all fagged. Now that's enough.
Well, what I propose, I think I've just about exhausted you and your husband up to this point, and as of now, I don't know enough about King to really press on with any other type of questions. What I have to, and the reason why is because I don't know that much about him yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and your husband are really the first contacts that I've had in any great degree.
Mm-hmm.
And
I wonder where Joe King is. Do you have any?
Yeah, he's in Washington. He's in Washington, and.
Where is he living? In the apartment of his own?
I really don't know. I really don't know. He has a Washington address, and I've already got some feelers out to him telling him what I'm up to. But what I need to do now is to start finding out some more things about King, and then being able to come back to you with specific questions, because up to this point I just asked you and your husband general questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you have a lot more information, but it's up to me to ask the right questions.
Yeah.
And at this point I don't know enough to ask any more questions. What I have to do is wait until my letters start rolling in this summer of all the people I'm writing to, until I can get some more research done, and particularly until I get that scrapbook. And that scrapbook that you gave to the Navy.
I think they're two or three of them.
All right. Well,
they're about that big,
mm-hmm.
and about that wide.
Yeah. Well, what I want to do, I've already written a letter to try to get a hold of that scrapbook.
Mm-hmm.
And
you don't want to waste your scrap, do you?
And